From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, August 7th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Dempsey Challenge. Run, walk, or bike this September to help the Dempsey Center support those impacted by cancer. DempseyChallenge.org.
Attorneys for Sharon Carrillo, who is charged in the fatal beating of her 10-year-old daughter, Marissa Kennedy, want prosecutors to return 7 cell phones that her attorneys believe contain evidence that could exonerate her. The phones were found in April by Sharon Carrillo's father. Endangered piping plovers have fledged 165 chicks so far this summer for a new record in Maine. The Maine Audubon reports the number of chicks represents a 29% increase over last year, and it follows a 30% increase last year. The shorebird has been on the federal endangered species list since 1986. And Acadia National Park says the popular precipice trail is open now that 9 peregrine falcon chicks have left their nests. The Bangor Daily News reports the precipice trail, the Valley Cove Trail, and the Jordan Cliffs Trail are usually closed for part of each summer because of the nesting peregrine falcon chicks. In weather tonight, mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms and lows in the low to mid-60s. Tomorrow, cloudy with some scattered showers or thunderstorms, highs in the low 70s to low 80s, lows in the low to mid 60s. In the immediate aftermath of 2 mass shootings in Ohio and Texas, which left at least 31 people dead, Maine's 4 members of Congress were quick to condemn the hatred and bigotry that appear to have motivated the alleged gunmen. But as investigations continue into the 2 massacres, some members of Maine's delegation have been reluctant to join those connecting President Donald Trump's well-documented record of inflaming racial animus and immigration rhetoric with what authorities believe is the alleged Texas shooter's hatred for Latino migrants. Steve Missler has that story.
After news broke last weekend that a gunman had entered an El Paso Walmart and began shooting people of Latino descent, the focus quickly shifted to President Trump's long history of hostile rhetoric toward immigrants and people of color. It didn't take long to find recent examples. At a campaign rally held in Florida in May, the president asked rhetorically what could be done to stop the influx of migrants at the southern border. He smiled and joked when a member of the crowd yelled, "Shoot 'em."
But how do you stop these people? You can't. There's no... That's only in the panhandle you can get away with that statement.
Then there's the president's repeated use of the word invasion to describe the situation at the border. It's been deployed in at least 2,000 Facebook ads paid for by Trump's re-election campaign, according to an analysis in the New York Times. It's also a word used in a 2,300-word screed that authorities are investigating to help explain the motives of the El Paso shooter. And for some of the protesters who showed up outside of 2nd District Congressman Jared Golden's Bangor office on Wednesday, there's a direct line between what happened in El Paso and the president's animus toward Latino migrants. Bobby Goldman was among them.
He's allowing and putting forth the racism that was more latent.
Goldman and the other half dozen protesters say they're not satisfied with Golden's response to the shootings, specifically his stance on several gun control measures stalled in Congress. But some were also unsure whether the first-term Democrat is sufficiently critical of the president's comments towards immigrants and the rise in violence involving white nationalists. Golden released a statement Monday saying it's undeniable that the El Paso shooting was motivated by hate and bigotry. But missing from that statement is the congressman's views about President Trump's rancor towards immigrants. The answer is still missing. Golden was out of the country and unavailable for an interview. And in response to questions from Maine Public Radio, a spokesman referred back to the congressman's original statement. Meanwhile, at a Tuesday event in Portland, Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins did address the president's rhetoric, including his repeated use of the word invasion, which she says is inappropriate. But she says,
I do not think that rhetoric is connected with the terrible mass shootings that we've just experienced in this country that are so horrific.
Collins says there are indications that the shooter had been radicalized by white supremacy well before Trump took office. And besides, she and other members of the delegation say, it's impossible to know right now what other factors may have pushed the shooter to commit what authorities say is an act of domestic terrorism, and possibly a hate crime. Collins was also asked a broader question. Does she believe that the president's rhetoric has emboldened white supremacists?
I don't. Unfortunately, this has been a problem in our country before the president became president.
Collins went on to note the long history of xenophobia and racism in the U.S., including in Maine, when the Ku Klux Klan once protested Irish and French Catholics who immigrated here. But she also acknowledged that the country is experiencing a spike in domestic terrorism involving white supremacists, an increase documented by a recent assessment by the FBI and the Anti-Defamation League's George Saleem, who warned Congress months ago about the growing threat.
Our ADL data has shown that in the last year, of the 50 murders that were committed at the hands of extremists, all but one were linked to right-wing extremism, and 78% were tied to white supremacy specifically.
The ADL report does not attribute the spike in violence to Trump, but Saleem did say leaders at all levels of government need to forcefully denounce white supremacy, something the president has been reluctant to do unequivocally unless he's reading from a teleprompter. Collins raised concerns about Trump's rhetoric and conduct before he was elected. In a column written for The Washington Post in August of 2016, she essentially declared his divisive conduct unfit for the presidency, an assessment that won her praise from the left and never Trumpers in the GOP. Now, as she gears up for an expected bruising re-election campaign, Collins has faced intense scrutiny for softening her critiques of a president who's now in total control of a Republican Party that continues to spawn Trump imitators and evict his critics. Maine's other U.S. senator, himself a frequent critic of Trump, is also choosing not to draw a straight line between the president's anti-immigrant rhetoric and the atrocities committed by the El Paso shooter.
This president's whole stock in trade is division and fear, and fear is the first cousin of hate.
But independent U.S. Senator Angus King says the president didn't invent division and fear, and like Collins, he says it's impossible to know what pushed the El Paso shooter over the edge. However, King says the president can't and shouldn't be absolved from the rise of white nationalism.
He certainly hasn't caused it, but I think you can argue that he's enabled and empowered it just by his rhetoric. It's just hard to deny that.
Democratic Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, who represents Maine's more liberal 1st District, says the president's verbal attacks on immigrants and people of color may not have forced the El Paso shooter to pull the trigger, but she says his rhetoric can normalize hate speech and hate crimes.
And it's never acceptable, and certainly not from the leader of our country. I think that they're, you know, Americans to a one believe that he should tone down his rhetoric.
And while he's at it, Pingree says, the president should reconstitute the domestic intelligence unit within the Department of Homeland Security that his administration disbanded, a unit that fed information about domestic terrorism and white supremacist groups to local police departments. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Students and staff at Deering High in Portland are pushing back against a public perception that the school has safety issues. Earlier this week, the Portland Press Herald reported that Deering's seeing a dramatic drop in enrollment for the incoming ninth grade class, driven in part by concerns among some in the community that the climate there is unsafe. But as Patty White reports, more than 120 Deering students have signed a letter defending their school.
Students entering high school in Portland have three schools to choose from, with unrestricted access to either Portland or Deering. For the past few years, Deering freshman enrollment has hovered close to 220 students. But for the upcoming school year, that number dropped by nearly 100 students. Meanwhile, Portland High, which typically enrolls around 185 freshmen, is jumping to more than 270. The reason for the swing is unclear, though Portland School Superintendent Javier Botana says one likely factor is a series of high-profile incidents at Deering over the span of a week last November. There were two fights, a false rumor about a student threat against the school, and a medical event that placed the school in lockdown, which created temporary confusion and stirred rumors.
So you have 4 days in a row of once-a-year type incidents. It's a statistical anomaly, but it happened. And so that, you know, created a sense of things aren't well.
Deering High Principal Greg Palmer agrees that those incidents created what he describes as a negative feedback loop. But he says those safety concerns are not shared by the students who attend Deering.
Of the 700 or so Deering High School students who were at Deering and are returning, would be returning for the 1920 school year, almost none of them have transferred away.
The perception that Deering is an unsafe place and an unsafe learning environment is just a perception. It's not like actually what happened.
Rising senior Salam Desta helped pen a letter defending the school in response to the newspaper story, which has been signed by 124 students. Deering is the most diverse high school in New England, north of Boston, and she suspects that may be a factor in why it's come under such scrutiny.
I have great relationships with my teachers. I trust my teachers. We have our student resource officer on campus. Like, it's not an unsafe environment. I've never felt I've never come to school and worried about my safety.
Jennifer Riggins, who's active in the Deering High PTO and is a parent of two seniors, one at Deering and one at Portland High, says she feels both schools are equally safe.
Both schools have been great for my kids and are wonderful institutions.
Though Superintendent Botana is heartened by the rally of support in the Deering High community, he is concerned about the lopsided shift in enrollment. He says the district has issued a survey to students and parents of the incoming freshman class to understand what influenced their decision in selecting a school. The results of that survey will be presented to the school board in the fall. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock, where we'll talk with two of Maine's finest children's book illustrators. I'm Nora Flaherty.